Blessings, beloved ones. I want to talk with you today about something that is very essential to most of us, but also surprising. It has to do with the possibility of understanding the difference between needing something and sharing something. You know, words are important, but we don't often think about what does something mean, like the difference between needing something and sharing something. But because it's important and they carry a vibration, I want to suggest some things to you about this. We exist as souls within bodies with a complete union with everything that we could possibly need because we exist in unity with the One, with the God, with the Creator, with the oneness from which we came. There is no lack within the deeper part of ourselves. The core self has no experience of lack because God doesn't experience lack, and the divine is within us, complete, absolutely. But do we think about this or feel it? Mostly not. But that's why I'm saying I want you to think with me about the difference between needing and sharing. Needing comes from a lack of awareness that this is even a reality, that it exists at all, that there's a place where there's no need, no need at all. There's a sense of not just self-sufficiency, but joy, completion, contentment, love, everything that you could possibly want on the human level already exists there in this place. So there is no need. Well, you know that the history of our human experience is not about that. We as human beings have lots of needs. We have needs for appreciation. We have needs for a sense of place, a sense of belonging in a place. We have needs for being liked. We have needs for coping with our own feelings of distress. We have needs for ways of assuring ourselves that we're safe. So these are all inner needs, emotional needs, in addition to the outer ones, which are simply the need to survive, that too. But I'm talking primarily about inner ones. So we have all these needs that are part of what we call the inner consciousness or of the ego self, the psychological self, the psyche. It's referred to in different ways. And we've gotten accustomed to thinking of these things as natural, and they have been. If for thousands of years we as human beings have defined these things as natural, then that was true for thousands of years. But all those thousands of years are based on the premise that there wasn't another reality within us, that they were actual needs. And so we exist in a state of half-truth about our own neediness, and we define as being human what we've gotten accustomed to in relation to what we think we need. We think it's perfectly natural to not want to feel rejected, that it's perfectly natural to want to feel appreciated or to feel praised or to feel that others see us in a good light. We just take that for granted. And there's nothing wrong with that because it's part of our history. The only thing is that it creates a problem when those needs aren't being met. That's the only thing, is that it creates a sense of insufficiency. So then we have to ask, is there another way of living besides that? And then some of us would ask, well, if we have no needs, what's the basis of our being together anyway? Why are we associating with each other? So then we come to the question of sharing. Sharing is not based on needing. Sharing is based on a sufficiency of love and of internal goodness that one wants to give it away. One wants to be a radiant force to give it away and to receive both. Not receive from need, but receive from sharing joy, from sharing gifts of the universe, let's say. Sharing, unlike needing, is based on love, and it's based on the idea or ideal that one could exist as a radiant force of whatever it is that you would like to have yourself, that you give it away, that potential for giving what you think you need but you already have exists within each of us. But, you know, we think we need these things. And so we come to the question to move from needing to sharing, if that's something that one would want to do. How do you get from needing to sharing? Well, as with all things in a spiritual life, getting there has to do with wanting to get there, intending to get there. But it involves certain key beliefs that I would like to put before you that we don't normally carry, which is a sense of completeness within the self. We don't carry it because this overlay of history, or the things we've become anxious about or afraid of or in need of, is so commanding that it doesn't allow that place of completion, completeness, self-sufficiency, although that's a term used for the human self-sufficiency, so we could say divine sufficiency inside. It doesn't allow for much feeling of that. If there's a desire to move from the state of need to the state of divine sufficiency, this place of completion, then you ask, one would ask, how do I do this? And there are two paths that have been historically the way. One is the path of meditation, which separates a person progressively over time from their emotional mental self, so that there's a direct experience of the other self that is the eternal self that is complete and whole. I'm not saying that everyone who meditates feels that, but that's the goal and principle of meditation of all kinds. It's to feel unity with the eternal soul, the unchanging part of oneself that exists in this state of completeness. The other path, which is the way that we have talked more about here, is the path of surrender and purification. The path of surrender and purification involves the belief that one can, through awareness alone, awareness and prayer, awareness plus invoking divine agency, transmute emotions and mental states so that they become clear. If you think of emotions and mental states as cloudy and as fogged over, or in some cases as very dark, but certainly not clear, then the principle of purification is that with divine agency as part of the movement, light allows you to become progressively clear so that the state of completeness, which is the eternal soul, makes itself known. And the other things, the mental and emotional states, they fall by the wayside. They disappear. They disappear. They dissolve, let's say. They dissolve in the light of your own deeper being. Both of those things, meditation and the transmutation or purification of mental and emotional states, they're not in competition. They're not mutually exclusive. Very often one does both in proportion to your own soul's interest or sense of resonance with whichever you feel inclined to be involved with. So it's not that you have to do one or choose one. It's not like that. But the emphasis on meditation and the emphasis on transmutation are different in the practice. In the practice, purification involves the greater willingness over and over again to surrender everything to the divine, every feeling, every thought, everything to the divine, and in that way to invite the light of God, the light of the oneness, into one's physical, emotional, mental being to do the work of cleaning. So I came upon this thought this morning that I thought was very dear. And it was a story from the book of Daniel. Some of you may know the Old Testament more than others. I myself am not very familiar with the book of Daniel, but I do remember this story about Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. Anybody here know this story? Shadrach, Meshach, Abednego. Yes. So this was the story, and I looked it up on your favorite resource and mine, Wikipedia. I looked it up, and it was what I thought, that these three young men, at the time of Nebuchadnezzar, were asked among the population of his subjects to worship an image of the king that was created in gold, that was put someplace. And these three, because of their faith in their God, the God that had no name, refused to do that. So Nebuchadnezzar commanded that the three and anybody else who did the same thing, rejecting the image worship, be tossed into a cauldron of fire where they presumably were going to be burned alive. So he did that. He did that. And as the story goes, the three of them did not die. They didn't perish. They weren't harmed in any way. And when Nebuchadnezzar looked into the cauldron to see what was happening, I guess, he saw four shapes, not three. And the fourth one was quoted, and this is the book of Daniel, like unto the Son of God. In other words, there was some divine agent without clear clarity about who that was, but a divine agent that was aiding the process of creating an immunity to the flames. So then they came out of the flames and they got promoted to public office. And Nebuchadnezzar created a new punishment for people who didn't worship his image, because he thought the flames weren't going to be sufficient, because God worked it out so that they didn't get hurt. So he figured another punishment might be better, so I won't go into that. But there was a new punishment created. Well, this story came to me, and I realized that it was a story about transmutation, that the flames were the flames of the emotional states, that was the fire that creates intensity around certain emotional and mental states, that creates a feeling of insufficiency and a need to do something about that insufficiency. So the flames were the emotional mental states representing the history of feeling that one couldn't cope with this danger of whatever that emotion or thought was. And so the history of ego defenses, all the things that we do to try to cope with feelings, is based on that fire of emotions, kind of the fear of drowning in your own emotional, whatever, distress about something, whatever the area is for you. So all of the history of the ego defenses is about that, is about the fire. And the way that this story goes is the same way that transmutation and purification go. Namely, one has to trust that the invisible is powerful enough so that if you let go of your own protective need for safety, which in this case is your own ego defenses, there's going to be another place to go. Those three didn't know that when they were punished. They just said, I can't do that. I can't bow down before this image. They didn't know they were going to be taken care of. And that's the dilemma of the ego self. That exactly is the dilemma. That when you let go of something that's not good for you, but that you feel is a response that you've gotten used to, it's not that you know what's going to happen next. It's certainly not in the beginning. It's that you do it assuming that something's going to work out, that it's going to be better. But you don't know it, you assume it. And those three had the faith of getting into the fire, not knowing but assuming that something could happen that would be different. And perhaps, I can't speak for them, but perhaps they felt, even if they couldn't be saved, that it still wasn't possible for them to bow down before a graven image, you know? But for we who are trying to get out of the fire of our own emotional difficulties, there has to be the willing surrender to the unknown that seems perilous to some of us, the unknown that in some cases would be, just do it differently. Just don't do the same thing. You don't know what's going to happen if you let go of this emotion. Just let go. See what happens. In other words, that's the issue. You surrender to the unknown because you trust in the unknown something could happen that's good, that's better, without knowing for absolute sure that one is going to be safe. Safe, saved. Those three, Shadrach, Meshach, Abednego, they were saved. Did they know they were going to be safe? I don't know. Do we know that we're going to be safe? I don't know. But you look into your own consciousness and ask yourself, and the principle of letting go of the fire of emotions is of surrendering to the unknown to do something different, feel something different, to not believe that something has to happen. It's like worshiping a graven image. It really is. It's like putting something in place of the reality of God, the reality of your emotional state, that has, for whatever moment it has, more importance than the divine one has for that moment. It's putting something else as saying, I can't do without this. I can't do without my anger. I can't do without my feeling hurt. I can't do without my feeling rejected. It's not all about anger. It could be about anything. We as human beings hold on to anything, just out of habit. So the inner being says, I can't do without it. Well, there you go. You know, there you go in terms of willingness to surrender to the unknown. You know, in a way, I'm milking this metaphor for all I can get out of it, of the cauldron, but it's as if, you know, one would be willing to stay in the cauldron of emotions because it's familiar, instead of getting out of it because, you know, you don't know what's going to happen if you step out of it. And I'm saying, if you take this to heart, that there is a place in you of unchangeability, of permanence, of a feeling of completeness without any need, just as a possibility, wouldn't it be better to try and go there? Thank you. But there has to be courage to let go of the known, and also to let go of the historical way in which we've been thinking, oh, it's just natural to feel this way. If somebody hurts my feelings, I feel hurt. If somebody criticizes me, I feel devalued. If somebody causes me to feel harmed, I feel angry. Whatever it is, the translation is, we make assumptions about that instead of looking for the higher place or the deeper place within ourselves. So the story has to do with the fire of purification, but also of willing surrender of habits of feeling, because one has a desire to be in a more complete state and believes that that complete state already exists. The belief is important. If you think you're going towards nothing, then you don't have the motivation to go. If you think you're going towards something that puts you in a sense of greater contentment or greater safety, greater peace, greater everything, then you would perhaps be willing to risk surrendering to the unknown of letting go of a typical emotional response to life. And we all have them, typical emotional responses that we call human nature. Except that human nature is changing. So, what do you want to do about that? It's called evolution. Human nature is changing, so you can't refer to it as if it's static. Therein lies the choice. Whether you take part in the evolutionary movement forward, or you take part in what has been because you know how to do that. We all know how to do that well. We all know what situations in life create certain feelings in us. And we just attribute that to, okay, so that's what is. I want to invite you all to consider this difference between needing and sharing with the idea to be held that each of us is capable, once we locate this place of the soul, this place of constancy, of being the one who shares out of fullness rather than the one who needs out of emptiness. We are each capable of that. If we weren't, there would be nothing to talk about. We are each capable of that. We are each capable of being a radiant force rather than an empty well. And so we make the choice with our daily decisions and our relationships, certainly, about whether we are a radiant force, or at least aiming to be that, or an empty well. I hope that, and pray and trust, that we are all in this movement forward within our own consciousness, moving from a sense of insufficiency toward a sense of completion, a completion that brings us wholly, in both senses of wholeness and holiness, brings us wholly to the recognition of the divine within us, the divine beings that we are. May this be true for ourselves and for all beings. May all the earth be blessed. Namaste.